Chapter 14. A known reader had told him with unsparing detail all that his book had been to them. And the wonder of it was, when all was said and done, that it had really been so little, that when their thick froth of praise was strained through the author's anxious vanity there remained to him so small a sediment of definite specific understanding. No, it was always the same thing, over and over and over again the same vague gush of adjectives, the same incorrigible tendency to estimate his effort according to each writer's personal preferences, instead of regarding it as a work of art, a thing to be measured by objective standards. He smiled to think how little, at first, he had felt the vanity of it all. He had found a savor even in the grosser evidences of popularity. The advertisements of his book, the daily shower of clippings, the sense that, when he entered a restaurant or a theater, people nudged each other and said, "Hat's Benton." Yes, the publicity had been sweet to him at first. He had been touched by the sympathy of his fellow men. Had thought indulgently of the world as a better place than the failures and the dyspeptics would acknowledge. And then his success began to submerge him. He gasped under the thickening shower of letters. His admirers were really unappeasable. And they wanted him to do such preposterous things, to give lectures, to head movements, to be tendered receptions, to speak at banquets, to address mothers, to plead for orphans, to go up in balloons, to lead the struggle for sterilized milk. They wanted his photograph for literary supplements, his autograph for charity bazaars, his name on committees, literary, educational, and social. Above all, they wanted his opinion on everything. On Christianity, Buddhism, tight lacing, the drug habit, democratic government, female suffrage and love. Perhaps the chief benefit of this stem, and was his incidentally learning from it, how few opinions he really had. The only one that remained with him was a rooted horror of all forms of correspondence. He had been unutterably thankful when the letters began to fall off. Diadems and Faggots was now 2 years old, and the moment was at hand when its author might have counted on regaining the blessed shelter of oblivion, if only he had not written another book. For it was the worst part of his plight that his first success had goaded him to the perpetration of this particular folly, that one of the incentives, hideous thought, to his new work had been the desire to extend and perpetuate his popularity. And this very week the book was to come out, and the letters, the cursed letters, would begin again. Wistfully, almost plaintively, he contemplated the breakfast tray with which Stret presently appeared. It bore only 2 notes and the morning journals, but he knew that within the week it would groan under its epistolary burden. The very newspapers flung the fact at him as he opened them. Ready on Monday. Geoffrey Benton's new novel, Abundance. By the author of Diadems and Faggots. First edition of 150,000 already sold out. Order now. 150,000 volumes. And an average of 3 readers to each. Half a million of people would be reading him within a week, and every one of them would write to him, and their friends and relations would write to. He laid down the paper with a shudder. The 2 notes looked harmless enough, and the calligraphy of one was vaguely familiar. He opened the envelope and looked at the signature. Duncan Weiss. He had not seen the name in years. What on earth could Duncan Weiss have to say? He ran over the page and dropped it with a wondering exclamation, which the watchful Stret, re-entering, met by a tentative, "S, sir?" Nothing. Yes, that is Benton picked up the note. There's a gentleman, a Mr. Weiss, coming to see me at 10. Stret glanced at the clock. Why, yes, sir. You'll remember that 10 was the hour you appointed for the secretaries to call, sir. Benton nodded. I'll see Mr. Weiss first. My clothes, please. As he got into them, in the state of irritable hurry that had become almost chronic with him, he continued to think about Duncan Weiss. They had seen a lot of each other for the few years after both had left Harvard. The hard, happy years, when Benton had been grinding at his business and Weiss, poor devil, trying to write. The novelist recalled his friend's attempts with a smile. Then the memory of one small volume came back to him. It was a novel, The Lifted Lamp. There was stuff in that, certainly. He remembered Vices tossing it down on his table with a gesture of despair when it came back from the last publisher. Benton, taking it up indifferently, had sat riveted till daylight. When he ended, the impression was so strong that he said to himself, I'll tell Apthorn about it, I'll go and see him tomorrow. His own secret literary yearnings gave him a passionate desire to champion Vice, to see him triumph over the ignorance and timidity of the publishers. Apthorn was the youngest of the guild, still capable of opinions and the courage of them, a personal friend of Benton's, and, as it happened, the man afterward to become known as the privileged publisher of Items and Faggots. Unluckily, the next day something unexpected turned up, and Benton forgot about Vice and his manuscript. He continued to forget for a month, and then came a note from Vice, who was ill, and wrote to ask what his friend had done. Benton did not like to say I've done nothing, so he left the note unanswered, and vowed again, I'll see Apthorn. The following day he was called to the West on business, and was gone a month. When he came back, there was another note from Vice, who was still ill, and desperately hard up. I'll take anything for the book, if they'll advance me $200. Benton, full of compunction, would gladly have advanced the sum himself, but he was hard up too, and could only swear inwardly, I'll write to Apthorn. Then he glanced again at the manuscript, and reflected. No, there are things in it that need explaining. I'd better see him. Once he went so far as to telephone Apthorn, but the publisher was out. Then he finally and completely forgot. One Sunday he went out of town, and on his return, rummaging among the papers on his desk, he missed The Lifted Lamp, which had been gathering dust there for half a year. What the deuce could have become of it? Benton spent a feverish hour in vainly increasing the disorder of his documents, and then bethought himself of calling the maid servant, who first indignantly denied having touched anything, can see that's true from the dust, Benton scathingly interjected, and then mentioned with hauteur that a young lady had called in his absence, and asked to be allowed to get a book. A lady? Did you let her come up? She said somebody had sent her. Vice, of course Vice had sent her for his manuscript. He was always mixed up with some woman, and it was just like him to send the girl of the moment to Benton's lodgings, with instructions to force the door in his absence. Vice had never been remarkable for delicacy. Benton, furious, glanced over his table to see if any of his own effects were missing. One couldn't tell with the company Vice kept, and then dismissed the matter from his mind, with a vague sense of magnanimity in doing so. He felt himself exonerated by Vice's conduct. The sense of magnanimity was still uppermost when the valet opened the door to announce Mr. Vice, and Benton, a moment later, crossed the threshold of his pleasant library. His first thought was that the man facing him from the hearthrug was the very Duncan Vice of old. Small, starved, bleached-looking, with the same sidelong movements, the same queer air of anemic truculence. Only he had grown shabbier, and bald. Benton held out a hospitable hand. This is a good surprise. Glad you looked me up, my dear fellow. Vice's palm was damp and bony. He had always had a disagreeable hand. You got my note? You know what I've come for? He said. About the secretaryship? Sit down. Is that really serious? Benton lowered himself luxuriously into one of his vast maple armchairs. He had grown stouter in the last year, and the cushion behind him fitted comfortably into the crease of his nape. As he leaned back, he caught sight of his image in the mirror between the windows, and reflected uneasily that Vice would not find him unchanged. Serious? Vice rejoined. Why not? Aren't you? Oh, perfectly. Benton laughed apologetically. only well. The fact is, you may not understand what rubbish a secretary of mine would have to deal with. An advertising for one I never imagined. I didn't aspire to anyone above the ordinary hack. I'm the ordinary hack, said Weiss dryly. Benton's affable gesture protested. My dear fellow. You see, it's not business what I'm in now, he continued with a laugh. Weiss's thin lips seemed to form a noiseless, isn't it? Which they instantly transposed into the audibly replied colon I inferred from your advertisement, that you want someone to relieve you in your literary work. Dictation, shorthand, that kind of thing? Well, no. Not that either. I type my own things. What I'm looking for is somebody who won't be above tackling my correspondence. Weiss looked slightly surprised. I should be glad of the job, he then said. Benton began to feel a vague embarrassment. He had supposed that such a proposal would be instantly rejected. It would be only for an hour or two a day, if you're doing any writing of your own, he threw out interrogatively. No. I've given all that up. I'm in an office now business. But it doesn't take all my time, or pay enough to keep me alive. In that case, my dear fellow, if you could come every morning, but it's mostly awful bosh, you know, Benton again broke off, with growing awkwardness. Weiss glanced at him humorously. What do you want me to write? Well, that depends, Benton sketched the obligatory smile. But I was thinking of the letters you'll have to answer. Letters about my books, you know I've another one appearing next week. And I want to be beforehand now, damn the flood before it swamps me. Have you any idea of the deluge of stuff that people write to a successful novelist? As Benton spoke, he saw a tinge of red on Weiss's thin cheek, and his own reflected it in a richer glow of shame. I mean, he stammered helplessly. No, I haven't, said Weiss, but it will be awfully jolly finding out. There was a pause, groping and desperate on Benton's part, sardonically calm on his visitor's. You've given up writing altogether? Benton continued. Yes, we've changed places, as it were. Weiss paused. But about these letters you dictate the answers? Lord, no. That's the reason why I said I wanted somebody you're well used to writing. I don't want to have anything to do with them, not a thing. You'll have to answer them, as if they were written to you. Benton pulled himself up again, and rising in confusion jerked open one of the drawers of his writing table. Hear this kind of rubbish, he said, tossing a packet of letters onto Weiss's knee. Oh, you keep them, do you? Said Weiss simply. Well, some of them, a few of the funniest only. Weiss slipped off the band, and began to open the letters. While he was glancing over them, Benton again caught his own reflection in the glass, and asked himself what impression he had made on his visitor. It occurred to him for the first time that his high-colored, well-fed person presented the image of commercial, rather than of intellectual achievement. He did not look like his own idea of the author of Items and Faggots, and he wondered why. Weiss laid the letters aside. I think I can do it, if you will give me a notion of the tone I'm to take. The tone? Yes, that is, if I'm to sign your name. Oh, of course. I expect you to sign for me. As for the tone, say just what you'd well, say all you can without encouraging them to answer. Weiss rose from his seat. I could submit a few specimens, he suggested. Oh, as to that, you always wrote better than I do, said Benton handsomely. I've never had this kind of thing to write. When do you wish me to begin? Weiss inquired, ignoring the tribute. The book's out on Monday. The deluge will begin about 3 days after. Will you turn up on Thursday at this hour? Benton held his hand out with real heartiness. It was great luck for me, you're striking that advertisement. Don't be too harsh with my correspondents. I owe them something for having brought us together. 2. The deluge began punctually on the Thursday, and Weiss, arriving as punctually, had an impressive pile of letters to attack. Benton, on his way to the park for a ride, came into the library, smoking a cigarette of indolence, to look over his secretary's shoulder. How many of 'em? 20? Good Lord! It's going to be worse than diadems. I've just had my first quiet breakfast in 2 years' time to read the papers and loaf. How I used to dread the sight of my letterbox. Now I shan't know I have one. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.